It's time now for Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle. Now, here's your host, Colin Fluxman.
Thank you, and welcome to another fact-packed show. Today, we're discussing financial issues you should be looking at before and during marriage and during and after divorce, as well as financial issues of the day. Our usual suspect, so to speak, are here, divorce attorney and mediator Lisa Zonder. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Colin.
Investment specialist Steve Wagner of Wagner Financial. How was your trip to Florida?
Outstanding, and good afternoon to you.
Wonderful. And man about town, Tom Spence, a KVTA veteran. Hi, Tom.
Hey, hello, Colin. Everything is going well for today, day after Valentine's.
Yes, wonderful. Happy Valentine's Day, one and all. Our special guest is forensic accountant Steve Gorelick. Is that correctly pronounced, Steve?
Yes, it is.
May I call you Steve, not Stephen?
Absolutely. Okay. That way we can distinguish between myself and Stephen.
So we have a clutch of Steves here today. Steve is of Lorch & Company, works with litigation attorneys, fellow mediators, and collaborators. Among the many big decisions couples make when planning to get married are how to handle the finances. Example, many young couples are still dealing with repaying student loans, which is a big burden on the marriage. So, the two Stevens in the studio, what should couples be thinking about when planning their finances generally, and specifically making a budget, planning for children, combining finances, etc.? Who wants to take a first stab at that question?
Well, I guess I will. And that is, when we talk about student debt or any kind of debts before the marriage, one wants to consider for that other spouse to be, you know, the acceptance of that particular debt. A lot of people nowadays are doing Google background checks, and it's amazing in terms of what you can find about that other spouse or that other partner to be as to what they owe and also what they own. And what's being said about that particular person.
That's a pretty wise decision, wouldn't you think? I mean, you Google the partner you're about to marry, find out about the finances.
I don't know how good or bad it is. I mean, it's just something that one may want to consider doing. Mm. But, you know, sometimes it's better not to know, maybe.
And what about planning for retirement, for example, Steve Wagner?
Well, that absolutely is vital, regardless single or married, but certainly married couples want to do that. They likely both work at employers that have employer plans like 401k plans. And, of course, 401k contributions are great because they come out of your paycheck automatically, making it a lot easier and convenient to save, as well as the fact that they're tax deductible and the employer typically matches.
Right.
And, of course, in a 401k plan, you're naming each other as beneficiaries in the great state of California, being a common law state. So that part of it is taken care of. And, of course, you know, those are the assets that you can accrue during your marriage.
So before the marriage, getting into a prenup, Lisa, what financial you draft prenup agreements, correct?
Yes, I do.
Now, what financial issues should a couple discuss before signing a prenup agreement?
There are countless financial issues that they need to consider before they sign a prenup. And so what I generally suggest is that they create for themselves a listing of separate and joint assets. And so, for example, if they have homes or rental properties, bank accounts, retirement accounts, and that they exchange the listings and attach them to the prenuptial agreement. They'll also probably want to exchange the copies of their respective credit reports. I always recommend that before prenuptial. And they have many other money decisions they need to make. So traditionally, each of the clients with a prenup, they're going to keep their own separate property from before marriage. But the decisions they have to make are whether new purchases of property are going to be kept joint or separate. So, for example, if we're going to go ahead and get married and buy a new home together or invest in some rental properties, how are we going to title those things? Are we going to buy them jointly or are we going to keep them separate? If you come into the marriage debt-free and your new spouse has significant premarital debts, obviously with the prenup you can decide how's that going to be handled during the marriage, whose money's going to be used to pay it off.
For example, the student loan issue that I discussed earlier.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And so that is something that you'll probably want to set up in your prenuptial agreement. Hopefully the spouse who incurred the student loan is going to be able to pay it back and use his or her own separate funds. But if they're not and the community ends up paying for that, well, what happens at divorce? You can decide that in your prenuptial agreement. So what if you put your premarital money into that new home that we talked about? So you make a down payment or a major capital improvement, say you redo the roof or you know, decide to do some significant reflooring, anything like that, are you going to get reimbursed for that contribution? Are you instead giving the separate money as a gift? Again, more decisions to be made when you're drafting a prenuptial agreement. And then a more fundamental question, are you and your mate's spending styles compatible? Are you going to live like Ralph Nader? Is she going to live like Imelda Marcos? You know, do you have plans for children? Are you going to save for college?
Man, that's a couple that just turned my stomach right there. I got to tell you that right off the bat. I just had lunch.
Oh, but the thing is, Steve, I mean, when you think about a prenuptial agreement, at least you're having these discussions, whereas if you didn't have this discussion, you know, you might get into the marriage and get some shock to your system that's even more, you know, lacking with the digestive qualities to it. It may not be very good for after lunch. So,
Steve, great. Before you continue, Lisa, Steve, do you have some input on that?
Well, it's always interesting when you have the two couples that spend differently, and sometimes resentment starts to come about and come into play as well. So, you know, that is a very, very important thing to discuss, especially in the beginning of a relationship.
Yeah, other examples of, you know, decisions that a couple needs to make when they're thinking about a prenuptial agreement would be, are you going to pool your incomes together? So if both parties are working, you know, are you going to have separate accounts? Or are you going to have separate accounts with a joint bank account to pay your joint living expenses? How exactly are you going to set up your finances? The prenuptial agreement is a great opportunity to roadmap what you're planning on doing during your marriage. And so those are things that can be discussed and also included in your prenuptial agreement. If you plan, for example, to keep your income separate, what happens if one of the spouses, father or mother, stays home to raise the child or the children, and then they have no income? Then how are the bills going to be paid? Because sometimes people will say, you know, we're just going to create a plan where everybody's income is separate, and he's going to have his, and I'm going to keep mine, and we're just not going to create anything joint. Well, that's all good and well and good, but what if they're the young couple that ends up having children, and, for example, mom stays home to raise the kids, and then, you know, the opportunity for her to contribute to her own account is completely gone, wiped out. So another point to be to be thinking about if you're drafting a prenup. And also, if one of you owes spousal support or child support from a prior relationship, how's that going to be handled in the context of your relationship? Are these payments going to be coming from joint property? Are they going to be coming from separate property? And what about a business that started during the marriage?
So it seems that it's absolutely critical and important that a prenup is drawn up.
For many couples, they'll want to have a prenup drawn up. And if they're not inclined to have a prenup because they have, you know, there's stigma against doing prenuptial agreements.
Yes.
People think, well, that's just, likely to create a failed marriage. It's a bad thing to do. We're already planning for the failure of the marriage. But if they don't, at least have these conversations and figure out what's important to you financially and if you're on the same page. But in particular, when it comes to a business, that's an important thing to think about, because if a couple does end up going through divorce, that can be one of the most costly areas for the couple to be able to divide up a business.
Yeah, one of the things I found out is that it's not necessarily the owner of the spouse or the in-spouse, as we call them, that's doing all the work, that the non-working spouse doesn't necessarily have a claim on that business. One wants to think that, gee whiz, I own 100% of the stock of that business, or I started the business, you know, during the marriage, and therefore, and I'm running it. But, you know, I found that's not necessarily the case.
In California, Lisa, do couples get to decide whether to keep their income joint or separate?
They can make a decision one way or another in the prenuptial agreement about their income. And so some people will pool income, as I had mentioned, and others will definitively decide that we're going to keep our income separate, and that means that we fend for ourselves. Again, the problem comes up is, what does the couple do if they end up having children and, you know, wife or husband decides to play Mr. Mom or stays home and is the mom? Then what do you do with that?
You know, one of the things I found out, and with some of the matters that I handle, is I have bank accounts that have one name on them. And when you have one name on them, that particular person thinks, oh, it's my money and it's my account, therefore this is mine. Not realizing that in California, it's really a 50-50 split.
Lisa, in your practice, you must have handled a variety of agreements about money. Would you share a story or two with us?
Yeah, I've had many experiences in dealing with couples who have different desires and you know, money styles. And so in one case that sticks out in my head, I remember husband had insisted that wife continue working even when, you know, they had children and they were planning for children. And his kind of comment in the middle of the mediation session was that, you know, she could take time off to the extent that state disability paid her for it, but otherwise he had no intention of being the sole breadwinner at all during the marriage. And that couple was comfortable with that particular agreement, but it sticks out in my mind as sort of an outlier agreement. It's not right in the middle. And you have couples who, you know, they strike their own deals. I've also had some where you see a huge disparity with, like, a, just as an example, an older husband who's pledging to share all of his accumulated wealth with a much younger wife. And those can also lead to some very sensitive discussions about, you know, what to do, especially if you represent the moneyed spouse, because ultimately down the line, if you have any estate planning issues or if that person predeceases the wife, you might end up with huge, you know, battles over money with the kids and probate and estate issues that come up.
You're listening to Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle on AM 1590 KVTA. If you'd like to send us an email, any question that you may have, lisa@divorcetalkradiocalifornia.com. That's lisa@divorcetalkradiocalifornia.com.
Are you and your spouse contemplating a divorce? Divorce is very stressful and can present a minefield of obstacles. Lisa Zonder is a divorce attorney and mediator. She can help you through this process, providing a number of alternatives to court, such as mediation and collaborative divorce with a professional team. Lisa's main office is on Townsgate Road in Westlake Village. She also serves mediation clients in her satellite office on Camden Drive in Beverly Hills. One call to Lisa will set you on the path to a peaceful and economical resolution that is focused on your family. Call 805-777-7740 or go online at zonderfamilylaw.com. Contact Lisa Zonder today, certified family law specialist, State Bar of California, Board of Legal Specialization. Call 805-777-7740 or go online at zonderfamilylaw.com. If you mention you heard it on the radio, your first consultation is free for local and qualified clients. Call 805-777-7740. That's Lisa Zonder, 805-777-7740, or email lisa@zonderfamilylaw.com. Consultations are granted based on appropriate qualification as determined by Lisa Zonder. Her practice is limited to family law matters in Ventura County and Beverly Hills.
Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle on AM 1590 KVTA. I'm Colin Flaxman. In the studio, we have Steve Wagner of Wagner Financial, Tom Spence, our KVTA veteran, and our special guest today is forensic accountant Stephen Garelli. Let's get back to the finances during the marriage. Steve's, how do couples sustain financial marital harmony?
Well, it takes work. Could we maybe bring Dr. Phil into this equation?
By all means,
would that
yes,
be all
yes,
right?
Of course.
Dr. Phil always has things to say about harmony.
He
and
does
marital issues and whatnot.
Right.
He actually did have some interesting things that were printed out in an article recently. And he makes some very good points. I mean, he talks about how relationships are mutually defined. Each partner needs to be comfortable with any guidelines that are set. So that's important. So there needs to be communication, basically, what he's talking about right now. And earlier, Lisa was talking very nicely about, you know, whether you should have joint accounts or separate accounts. And I think Dr. Phil makes a very good point in the article. He says that there should be discretionary income that each partner has and they have control over, so that they have that sense of individuality and freedom.
In other words, not one person having control and say, here, this is your allowance for a week. You
absolutely.
Know. Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. of course, he talks about joint versus separate accounts. He thinks that that all the accounts should be separate. And I think as a financial advisor, I think, you know, harmony is there should be a joint account where mutually shared expenses are paid out of. And then each partner should have their own separate accounts for their own discretionary spending.
Reducing debt is a big factor. What actions should be taken to eliminate or reduce debt?
I think paying your bills promptly and on time is probably one of the most important things to do. Your FICO score is altered and changed because of delinquent payments, as well as if there's some discretionary income, one can prepay their mortgage debt, their credit card debt, and alike, So those are always good things to do.
Keeping credit cards, good or bad thing, as long as you pay it regularly, because that's going to show up in your credit report, right? Do you have comments about that?
Yeah, I think you've got to have credit cards, and it's important not to have 17 of them. Honestly, in my practice and all of the years that I've been giving advice, I've always recommended to have, you know, at least a debit card and or a credit card. You know, American Express, not to tout them, but you've got to pay that off every month. But you build up a great credit report doing that. And then, of course, there's always going to be situations where perhaps you need to have some kind of real literal credit. Just be careful about it and not overdo it. And I think that comes back to kind of understanding who you are as an individual and as a couple. You know, Dr. Phil talks about a lot of times when there's emotional or financial problems in the marriage, you know, he says, take a hard look at what's really behind your spending habits. It could be some kind of you're unhappy in the marriage, literally. And so you go out and you either eat a lot or you spend a lot. And so those are the things that really should be looked at.
Those are warning signs, obviously, right? So couples are bound to make mistakes, financial mistakes, right? What are some of the mistakes that they make? And I know that Tom has a story or two to tell, but from our experts first, what are the kind of mistakes that our married couples generally make?
I think when one couple wants to keep their inheritance separate and they throw it into another bank account, then one has a problem of defining, even though that inheritance is separate property, you know, from California, the difficulty is to be able to track that money and the cost that goes behind that as compared to opening a separate account saying, okay, this is the inherited money or inherited stocks, whatever, and just kind of keeping it there and parking it there. Also, in addition to that, one doesn't want to necessarily put in new money because one has to decide where did the new money come from. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes a whole unraveling and a costly mistake that could be handled.
I would just add that that's at divorce, because if the couple stays together forever and they mingle all their money.
Oh, I hope they do stay together.
Exactly.
I think another big mistake that couples make, you know, particularly when they're having some issues, the marriage may be a little bit strained. You know, typically the husband will think, well, I can solve all of this by buying my wife a new car. So you go out and buy the new car and she's happy for a week or whatever. Everything's fine for a week, but it's artificial. The same problems are there. And now you've created a new problem, a new debt, which will just add to the strain of the marriage.
Right.
So that's another big problem,
right.
A mistake that's made.
Tom, you have a story or two to tell, a scary story?
Yeah, one of them involves a business. And I would just suggest this because a very good friend of mine got into a business and it was all go. And exactly what you said, the new car smell and everything's beautiful and the grand opening and the ribbon cutting. And then things start to spiral and it can get horrible. So I would just... first of all, I would get the book, the E-Myth, I think it was called, the E-Myth, the Entrepreneurial Myth. Mm. Read it twice and then decide if you want to go on a business. Make sure everybody's on the same page because within the same instance, they also decided to have an additional child. And you went up in expense on the child. You went up in expense on the business. And it was disastrous. It was absolutely horrible. And the other thing that's a weird wild card, and I want to just ask everybody in the room about this one, that can be a real life changer on finances. When there's, if somebody gets a disease, like let's say cancer, your outlook on life changes dramatically. Another very good friend of mine, he got an illness, and when he was done with the illness and he made it out, he became a different person and he wanted to go out and do stuff and it completely changed the arc of where they were going and it disrupted, you know, the celebration of, my God, you're over this, became, hey, honey, oh, let's go to Bora Bora. And it was right. A bad look, and it was really a bad look because he wanted to go out and play. What are we saving for? Life's too short. And I will tell you, it was a remarkable difference in their mindset. I don't know how often that comes up, but it really, really changed things. And, from victory to what do we do now?
You know, one of the things that I found in the idea of money and family is when you start to borrow money from family or friends or from parents or from the in-laws, boy, does that really make it a hairy situation. How's it going to be paid back?
But
sometimes that becomes inevitable, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you get into a sticky situation, it becomes inevitable that who do you turn to? You turn to your family. So you're saying that's not a good idea?
I always suggest that they go to a third party like a bank or financial institution rather.
So there's no emotions involved, right?
Exactly right. There's nothing to be handled.
Okay.
I've actually had to counsel clients to say, look, have your children call your financial advisor and ask him if it's okay for you to loan them more money. That's how bad it is. And that usually puts an end to it right there. That can be the defense. It's a big, 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 big problem. It's like the people that win the lottery, all of a sudden they have all these new friends and relatives, and they ended up blowing. Typically, most of these folks blow that money away, and it's all because of these bad decisions.
Right. So if you win the lottery, go and see a financial advisor, how to handle it, right? I want to get to Lisa again about separate and joint property under California law when we come back.
Going through a divorce is never easy. It's not only emotionally draining, but the many financial decisions can add to your stress. For over 25 years, Ventura-based Stephen Wagner, certified financial planner of Wagner Financial, has been helping people just like you make smart decisions when emotions can sometimes get in the way. From planning your retirement income to investment management, Steve Wagner can create a roadmap that you can understand and follow as you embark on your new life. In addition to providing clients with access to informative financial content and useful tools, Wagner Financial will make you feel more confident about your financial stance now and in the future. Call 805-339-0760 for an appointment. That's 805-339-0760 or log on to WagnerFinancial.com. For that one-on-one personalized financial attention, call Steve Wagner Financial on 805-339-0760. 805-339-0760. Stephen H. Wagner is an investment advisor representative with Transamerica Financial Advisors, as well as securities and investment advisory services offered through TFA, member FINRA, SIPC, and a registered investment advisor. Wagner Financial is not affiliated with TFA. Are you contemplating divorce? Maybe you've already filed for divorce and are overwhelmed by the process, or you're in the midst of a divorce and not sure what to do next. Well, we have the answer for you. The Second Saturday Divorce Workshop. Explore the legal, financial, and emotional aspects of divorce. Discover community resources available to help you. Talk with others experiencing similar life changes. Learn from experts who have guided others through divorce. Workshops are held at 2625 Townsgate Road, Suite 330, Westlake Village, on the second Saturday of each month from 8:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. Register by calling 805-372-1810. 805-372-1810 or email us at secondsaturdaywestlake@gmail.com. That's 2ndsaturdaywestlake@gmail.com. Call 805-372-1810. 805-372-1810. If you're looking for workshop locations other than Westlake Village, check out the website at wife.org. That's wife.org.
Divorce Lisa's on the style on AM 1590 KVTA. We're discussing financial issues you should be looking at before and during marriage and during and after divorce, as well as financial issues of the day. Lisa, coming to you, at the time of divorce, do you get to keep property that you own before you get married?
Yeah, the property that you own before you're married is presumptively going to stay your separate property. So as an example, if you have a home that you had in your name, you owned it before marriage, and your fiance has not contributed any money to it, it's generally going to be your separate property. So yes, if you divorce, the separate property is going to be confirmed to you as your separate property.
What happens if you receive an inheritance? How does that factor in? Is that yours to keep on divorce?
If you get property after marriage that's a gift or it's a result of an inheritance, that's also going to presumptively be your separate property. So let's just say if your husband's father passes away and leaves your husband an inheritance, like a home, that's generally going to be confirmed as your husband's separate property, and that's in the case you and your husband end up in a divorce.
So if you had rental income from your premarital rental property, is the income yours under California law?
Yeah. After your marriage, the income that you have from your separate property is going to presumptively also remain your separate property. And another example would be, let's just say you and your spouse own a rental property in Lake Tahoe, and during marriage, you're collecting rents because you have tenants there. And you keep the rental income in a separate property bank account, which the accountants love to hear.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm making this a very clean hypothetical. then the increase in the value of that separate property Lake Tahoe rental home that you have will also presumptively be separate property. So the income and the actual increase in the value of the property will both be separate. And there are some California cases that say that when the increase of value, profits, or extraordinary income is because of the efforts of a spouse during the marriage or after you get married, then in that case, a portion of the increase in value or profits can be apportioned to the community. What that means is essentially is you could make an argument that, let's say, wife is helping you collect the rents on that Lake Tahoe property. She could argue that she had some, you know, contribution to that. And so if a couple is doing a prenuptial agreement, which is what we were talking about earlier, they can modify that and change that from what the California law defaults to.
So if you use premarital savings to contribute to the down payment of a house, for example, a joint house, during the marriage, you get that money back in the event of a divorce?
Yeah, the family codes, there's a family code section 2640 that provides that in the event you get divorced, contributions from your separate property to acquiring joint property or even the separate property of the other spouse are going to be reimbursed to you, the contributing party, without interest or adjustment. So to be to give an example, if you take money from your premarital savings, you use it as a down payment on a house, and you're going to go ahead and buy a new joint home with your spouse. Generally, that's going to be reimbursed to you on a dollar-for-dollar basis. So you put $50,000 into the new property that you purchase with your spouse, you're usually going to get back $50,000. It's called a dollar-for-dollar reimbursement. That sort of contribution can be waived, but generally, you have to do so in writing.
And can a couple agree to change the character of property to deviate from the law?
They can change the character of property the way California defaults the law would ordinarily apply. So if they ended up going through a divorce, the trial judge is going to normally have to apply California law. But the couple can have a prenuptial agreement or even a marital agreement that says in that sum and substance, we've decided to do things differently from California law. And a couple can even make a transmutation agreement or change the character of their property even in during their marriage. I've known some couples to come to me and they've been having a hard time with their relationship, and mostly it was financial issues that were straining their relationship. And then they were able to just simply say, you know what, this is how we want to resolve this issue. We're going to put it in writing and go about our business and go back to being happily married because we no longer have to think about this problem. If you're going to do a transmutation agreement or, you know, try and change the character of property during your marriage, it's something you generally want to see a lawyer about because it does need to be done a certain way. Otherwise, it creates havoc and expense in a divorce.
Right.
This is something that I've heard, and Lisa, you can comment on this. And that is, in essence, a prenuptial can do almost anything it wants to between the couple. However, the only thing it cannot do is deal with child support or potential child support issues.
Anything that's illegal, the prenup can't deal with. Child custody, generally not, and child support, generally not, because those are done by law, and a judge normally would set the child support amount. So that you usually can't contract
right,
for.
Right, but just about anything else?
Just about anything else. I mean, you know, some things might not be enforceable if they're unconstitutional, but just about anything else.
Yeah, so you got to be careful in that regard.
Right.
Steve, as a forensic accountant, you've obviously seen a lot of emotional situations. Money stirs up a lot of client emotions. For example, the anger from the spouse who writes the check to pay spousal support. The client says, I'd rather pay the experts than my spouse until they see the bill, that is.
That is very correct. What I found in terms of the practice that I've done over the past 25 years is the comment that comes out, one between the spouse who's paying, and it could be male or female. And in fact, a lot more women at this point in time are in the workforce, and there are a lot of what I'll call house husbands that take care of the children and so on. So,
Mr. Mom.
Right.
Exactly. Okay.
And I think that movie was probably ahead of its time.
Yes.
But, you know, how true that is, and it doesn't matter in terms of who is paying, the anger is still there. And when one wants to think about that, it's really the idea of writing a check for that other spouse who thinks that they're entitled to the money. Entitlement being, look at all the time that I spent doing this or that, and yet I don't want to contribute anything else, and therefore I don't want to work, and I don't want to, you know, I just want to live off what we used to do during the lifestyle of the marriage, and that again becomes a whole nother
special situation.
And of course, the client fears the unknown, their financial future income and future expenses to pay support and equalization payment, right?
Yes. There's only so much money to go around. And one of the things when you do a property division is that equalization payment. And whether or not there's enough cash and or assets available to do some swaps. And if there isn't, and there's still some money that needs to be paid, the question becomes, okay, am I going to do a note on the balance? How am I going to handle this? What do I need to do? And that's a whole nother set of financial planning. And you may need to talk to your financial expert like Steve over here, who might be able to assist.
When it comes to affordability, like keeping the house, or do we need to sell it, have extra money for savings and be able to go on a vacation, or as you put it, a staycation. I haven't seen that word before. Interesting word.
Well, again, there's only so much money to go around, and one spouse says to the other, well, you're the one that's still making the money, you're still working, and therefore you can afford to do all these different things. And it almost, the appearance is that the two are not on an equal plane, that the receiving spouse of support is getting less than what the working spouse has or can do with that expense of the business or whatever it is that they're doing. So it becomes a factor in dealing with the mediation process and in the collaborative process. How do you equalize and get everybody knowing and get them on the same plane?
Is that an easy task, getting everybody on the same level? Was that too general a question?
It's really a general question, but I think the idea is in these two processes that in order for them to succeed, they have to be able to be very transparent and share all information.
Right, right. You're listening to Divorce Leases on the Style on AM 1590 KVTA. We're discussing financial matters you should be considering before marriage, during marriage, and after divorce and during divorce. If you have any questions, please send an email to lisa@divorcetalkradiocalifornia.com. lisa@divorcetalkradiocalifornia.com.
Are you and your spouse contemplating a divorce? Divorce is very stressful and can present a minefield of obstacles. Lisa Zonder is a divorce attorney and mediator. She can help you through this process, providing a number of alternatives to court, such as mediation and collaborative divorce with a professional team. Lisa's main office is on Townsgate Road in Westlake Village. She also serves mediation clients in her satellite office on Camden Drive in Beverly Hills. One call to Lisa will set you on the path to a peaceful and economical resolution that is focused on your family. Call 805-777-7740 or go online at zonderfamilylaw.com. Contact Lisa Zonder today, certified family law specialist, State Bar of California, Board of Legal Specialization. Call 805-777-7740 or go online at zonderfamilylaw.com. If you mention you heard it on the radio, your first consultation is free for local and qualified clients. Call 805-777-7740. That's Lisa Zonder, 805-777-7740, or email lisa@zonderfamilylaw.com. Consultations are granted based on appropriate qualification as determined by Lisa Zonder. Her practice is limited to family law matters in Ventura County and Beverly Hills. Going through a divorce is never easy. It's not only emotionally draining, but the many financial decisions can add to your stress. For over 25 years, Ventura-based Stephen Wagner, certified financial planner of Wagner Financial, has been helping people just like you make smart decisions when emotions can sometimes get in the way. From planning your retirement income to investment management, Steve Wagner can create a roadmap that you can understand and follow as you embark on your new life. In addition to providing clients with access to informative financial content and useful tools, Wagner Financial will make you feel more confident about your financial stance now and in the future. Call 805-339-0760 for an appointment. That's 805-339-0760 or log on to wagnerfinancial.com. For that one-on-one personalized financial attention, call Steve Wagner Financial on 805-339-0760. 805-339-0760. Stephen H. Wagner is an investment advisor representative with Transamerica Financial Advisors, as well as securities and investment advisory services offered through TFA, member FINRA, SIPC, and a registered investment advisor. Wagner Financial is not affiliated with TFA.
Steve, you've just come back from Florida, and you've kind of found your California feet again, I presume, right?
Absolutely.
Tell us a little about your trip to Florida.
Well, it was a great trip. Every year in our business, we have certain compliance-related issues that we have to come together as a group on, and this was a conference that dealt with all of that exciting stuff. But there were also some excellent keynote speakers. Ben Stein was there,
a
noted
really?
Economist and whatnot, giving an interesting discussion. And
he's very boring on television. Of
yeah,
course.
Bueller.
But he does that. Specially.
Bueller. Yeah, I mean he's pretty boring. He's a pretty boring guy.
Right.
But
nice guy. I have
funny
met him
boring.
Actually. Yeah.
Funny boring.
When I worked
yeah.
at KVTA, not KVTA, KTLA,
yeah.
television station in
yeah.
the mid of 2000s, he used to record his money show.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the, one of the stages there at
Ask Ben Stein.
Ask Ben Stein yeah. at when I worked at KTLA and I met him. He's, mm. he's a fun guy.
He is a fun guy.
So boring.
Yeah, he is very and yeah, but he's a good. But you know, speaking
yes.
of boring, I was I can't get over. I'm still trying to digest the Ralph Nader Imelda Marcos pairing. I can only imagine. You know, Imelda's famous for the shoes.
Yes.
And it made me think. You know, if they went into business together and opened up a shoe store, it would be called Payless Shoes, right? I mean, maybe
right.
that's how it all happened. I don't know.
Who else were keynote speakers there?
Oh, there no one of any real note.
Okay, so Ben Stein. Good
not
enough.
To put them down, but Ben Stein was the guy.
I'm sure you've been looking at the stock market.
Indeed.
Is the correction over? Is the market on the rise? What's the situation?
Absolutely, the correction is over. We needed a correction for a long time, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago. You know, the currency issues in the emerging markets were blamed for the downtrend in our stock market. But in essence, most of the economists and experts that I respect have been saying that the markets needed to correct for some time, and this was a great time to do it. It went from 16,600 on the Dow down to 15,400, and now we're back to 16,000.
My understanding is a lot of that had to do with the emerging markets.
It did, absolutely.
How is that corrected?
Well, it's a long story, and perhaps we
give
could,
us the 10-cent or the dime version.
When the Federal Reserve, I like that, the five and dime version.
Yes, we'll exactly.
Do that. Where's Ralph Nader when we need him? Basically, at the end of the day, when the Fed says we're going to taper bond purchases, that draws money out of the emerging markets is what that does. And it makes the emerging markets go down. It makes their currencies weaker, for lack of a better term. And it creates a lot of uncertainty. So as a result, our market sold off. But really, it was nothing more than an excuse. Trust me on that. Earnings have been great. 70% of all U.S. companies that have reported so far, their fourth quarter earnings have beaten earnings estimates. So our economy is in the right footing. It's slow but sure. Companies are in great shape, and the stock market is corrected and moving back up.
I was watching Bill O'Reilly the other night, and he had somebody dealing with finances, and mm-hmm. he said, this is definitely not the time to buy or sell.
Wow.
How accurate is that?
Well, I mean, honestly, it would depend upon your own personal situation whether it's the time to buy or sell, but if you're strictly looking at it from an opportunistic market and you have a longer-term time horizon, I mean, it's clearly an opportunity to buy.
What stocks are you looking at? What are the stocks to watch?
Well, you know, we've talked about this before, and without, you know, rehashing old hash, and
banking,
we talk about Bank of
banking,
America,
right.
financial companies
right.
in the banking and insurance industry, as we get closer to the time when Janet Yellen, the woman that's running our country's money now, first woman ever, and she had her first testimony this last week before Congress. It went very well. The market went up 200 points that day, so what a nice pat on the back for the women in this
Lisa,
country.
Lisa is smiling.
Thank you, Lisa.
Right?
Lisa is smiling. And so that was great. But yeah, that's where we're at.
And 2016, possibly a woman president. Who knows? Maybe. How about Lisa for president? Yay, let's go Lisa for president.
I thought I usually get signed up for things when I'm not present.
Oh, okay.
I'm here, so I can say no.
What about gold and oil? Do you think those are going to go up?
Well, I mean, honestly, gold has been probably the best performer this year after having an awful performance last year. Gold was down almost 30%. Gold stocks were down 51%. But this year, the average gold mining share is up around 12 to 15%. So they've actually led this market in comparison to everything else. So I think, yes, they're way undervalued.
I have a question for you, Steve. What happens when you have shutdowns due to weather, like we have going on right now back on the East Coast?
Well, I think that's an outstanding question. You know, we just had the retail sales that came out for January that were dismal. And honestly, I mean, people say, yeah, you can't use the weather as an excuse. But in this case, you can use the weather as an excuse. And I point to the simple news note that what about all these air flights that have been canceled? I mean, that has a direct effect on the economy. So you can imagine people that would typically go out to the shopping malls and whatnot. If there's a blizzard outside, you're not going to go out to the shopping malls. You're going to stay home. You're not going to spend.
Right. That's in the East Coast. Look at the weather out here.
That's right.
People are spending up a
we
storm.
We make up
right?
for it yes, on yes. the West Coast.
Absolutely. Even the nice, rich people in California can't make up for what's going on in the East Coast.
That's true. You were talking about retail sales. Slightly up in December, but economists are expecting a 0.1% decline this month.
Yes.
So what are the prospects?
And it was worse than that. It was worse than that. It was a 0.4 decline in January. Yeah. So that, and again, but it had to do with the weather. You'll see a big bounce back when spring comes.
We hope so.
But what about weather with online sales? Because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I was going to get to that, but it's a good point that Tom
makes. I'm speechless.
So
that's a great question.
And you click on Amazon, you say, no, it's too cold.
But hang on.
Either that.
Are they going to be able to deliver?
Well, that's a good point. They may not deliver, but either that or this cold weather made people so cold and cozy feeling they jumped in bed. And who knows what's going to happen
down
the road.
Watch television. They're going to be watching
television.
We'll
see everybody in November, you know, is what's going to happen.
Right. But, you know, you mentioned
that
Amazon.
That is a good point, though, Tom.
But you mentioned Amazon. It's hiring 2,500 mm-hmm. people,
right.
2,500 people,
right.
To their distribution center in Virginia, which is where a lot of the bad weather is, mm-hmm. on top of 20,000 full-time jobs last year. And this despite a drop in their share price.
Yes.
Obviously, online purchasing is gaining momentum.
It is. And, you know, Amazon.com doesn't make money. People think Amazon.com is a very profitable company. No, it does not make money. But they've been given a pass by Wall Street because they're Amazon.com and they're building this unbelievable infrastructure, these distribution centers, these fulfillment centers all over the country, hiring people. Wall Street's giving them a pass because once this is all plugged in, then profits will follow. But lately, their share price has struggled a little bit. Mm-hmm. But if you go back a year ago, that's up, I think, more than 50 or 60%.
You skirted on the brick and mortar about retail sales. Mm-hmm. How is it affecting online purchasing? Does it really affect the brick and mortar stores?
Well, I think ultimately it does in some way, but there's always going to be brick and mortar. Colin, you know, people want to get up. They do want to go out to the malls. They want to see it, feel it, smell it, touch it, the whole deal, the whole experience of a mall. So there's room for all of this.
But
there
they
really
do
is.
That and go home and
well,
buy.
Well, some do.
Go home and buy online, right?
And that's why you have more of these retailers offering, you know, same as internet prices. You
yes.
know, they're really trying to combat that.
Well, isn't it the convenience of the internet more than just
Absolutely.
The prices that they
Absolutely.
It's the convenience
but Colin,
of pointing
also,
and clicking.
Yeah, it also has to depend on what the item is, because if it's a large item, you know, the internet, you may not want to use it. You're going to get charged potentially a lot of money for the shipping, and sometimes you actually want to see the item, depending
yes.
on what the size is.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to buy a motorcycle off of the internet. Do you know what
I'm saying? People
buy cars off
the internet.
You can, but generally speaking, certain things, like I think what Steve said, you're going to want to, you know, have your five senses around it.
Absolutely. Well, that's good news, right?
And not to be chauvinistic, but men don't, honestly, we don't want to go into the mall and shop.
Steve.
And the ladies, they love to go into the mall.
Don't stereotype. I do not like shopping.
But hang on. The men like to go into tools and electronics, right?
I would say, yeah. And the other thing I'd heard, the problem with Amazon is when they shipped Harry Potter, one of the first shipments, it was a huge hit, but books are heavy. And that was one of the big blowbacks because they gave such a discount on it. Mm. They got killed on shipping.
Wow.
So, and when that pet.com, whatever it was, and they were shipping 60-pound bags of dog food.
Wow. Yeah, that's just...
Who would do that?
Yeah.
You know, it did. So some things don't make any sense at all.
What about housing, Steve? Mm-hmm. Is it a good time to buy or sell? We were talking about housing and selling the house during mm-hmm. the divorce mm-hmm. process. But right now, is it a good time?
Well, you know, look, I'll speak to what's going on locally. I have a handful of clients who are real estate professionals, and I've spoken with them over the last couple of months, and they all say that housing prices have gone up dramatically. Inventories are at the lowest level that they've seen in years. And so there's some price pressure. So, I mean, you know, if you're buying the house as an investment, I would have to say no. Honestly, I mean, you don't ever buy a house as an investment.
Why not?
Because it's a home you're going to live in. You're going to have your spouse or significant other, your children. It's a home. And you know, yes, it'll probably go up in value over many, 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 many years, but that shouldn't be the reason you buy it. If you buy the house for that reason, it's going to put stress on the marriage.
All right, as far as the marriage is concerned, but if you're buying houses for
renovation. This is a divorce
show. It is, yes, but we're talking about money, man. What about buying houses for renovation and
Absolutely.
Rental and things like that?
If you have that's a good investment. If you have experience in that, if you have construction skills or you have access to inexpensive construction skills, you can really make this a profit a proposition, then absolutely it's a good idea. And to rent out.
You're listening to Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle on AM 1590 KVTA. Our email address is lisa@divorcetalkradiocalifornia.com. lisa@divorcetalkradiocalifornia.com. And when we come back, I want to address an issue that you brought up during the break, Steve Gorelick, if you don't mind. So there we go. lisa@divorcetalkradiocalifornia.com. That's our email. Please feel free to use it.
Are you contemplating divorce? Maybe you've already filed for divorce and are overwhelmed by the process. Or you're in the midst of a divorce and not sure what to do next. Well, we have the answer for you. The Second Saturday Divorce Workshop. Explore the legal, financial, and emotional aspects of divorce. Discover community resources available to help you. Talk with others experiencing similar life changes. Learn from experts who have guided others through divorce. Workshops are held at 2625 Townsgate Road, Suite 330, Westlake Village, on the second Saturday of each month from 8:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. Register by calling 805-372-1810. 805-372-1810 or email us at secondsaturdaywestlake@gmail.com. That's 2ndsaturdaywestlake@gmail.com. Call 805-372-1810. 805-372-1810. If you're looking for workshop locations other than Westlake Village, check out the website at wife.org. That's wife.org.
Lisa, we've spoken about the second Saturday and you're part of that. How is it working?
The second Saturday is taking place at the Ventura College of Law, and we just started in January, and it's working out really well. We are surprised at, you know, people are coming from far and wide, actually, L.A., Santa Barbara, and Ventura. So it's actually got a lot of coverage, and it's going really, really well. We have an interdisciplinary team there. Steve Gorelick's participated in the past. So we have, divorce-related professionals, including accountants and therapists and attorneys. I share the stage with some others when we present, and, sometimes we divide it up. We have trial, tips. We have about the process if you want to opt out of the courts to do collaborative and mediation.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's going really, really well. We've had some interesting questions, too, one that I was going to pose here, which is, somebody asked us about how to repair credit, and I noticed something I was reading on the internet because I wanted to figure out the answer for myself. And, how do you repair your credit if most of the credit cards had been in a long-term marriage in your husband's name, for example? And I saw something about a FICO expansion score as an alternate way to get credit. I don't know if anyone here has heard anything about that, but there was something called Anthem Score.
Wow.
So apparently there is something that I read on the internet, whether it's accurate or not is anyone's guess, but apparently if you have regular utility payments for water and electric, there may be alternate ways to measure if you're able to pay debt, and so you might look into that with FICO. So that's something that I just thought was interesting. So we get a lot of very fascinating questions. No matter how long the professionals have been doing this, we always get great questions from the audience.
Do you get men coming to these sessions?
Yeah, it's been pretty equal. We've had, men and women and all age ranges, too. So we've had people in their 20s and we've had people, who are post-retirement. Now with the gray divorce exploding, we're getting, more gray divorce clients coming.
Elaborate,
as well.
Please. What is gray divorce?
For
those who've never heard of it.
Well, just basically, 50 and up, generally.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Stephen Gorelick, back to you. You had something to bring up, did you?
Yeah. I remember, just a moment ago that Lisa was speaking about a nice, simple thing regarding the rental income and the keeping that rental income in a separate bank account. If it's not as simple as that, and one gets that the rental property doesn't cover all of that rental property expenses, then the question becomes, how is that funded and where did that money come from to cover those additional expenses on the rental property? So one has to be concerned about another legal aspect called a mor marsden, which is the appreciation of that particular property and the debt associated with that property doesn't necessarily all belong to that separate owner,
but now there might be a community interest in that particular property, and therefore one has to consider taking a look at how much debt was paid during the marriage, whether or not there was it really all separate, or did a community happen to share in that principal reduction? And the factors that go into that can be a little more confusing than just the simple scenario. In addition, you now have refinancing that's been going on, especially the last couple of years, and where do those proceeds go to? You'll hear commercials on the radio that talk about refinancing, but they always do the caveat and talk to your tax advisor, because if it's not dealing with the house itself, then in technicality it's not really a deduction for your taxes.
As far as those advertisements are concerned, they're targeting the older population, are they not, with refinancing?
Some, but not necessarily. Some people...
Why would they be doing that?
Well, you're trying to really... The HARP program is really trying to take care of those individuals that have real estate that is almost upside down or a partial upside down, meaning that the debt is exceeding the amount of equity that they have in their home. And so the government's trying to assist with the banks for those homeowners to be able to reduce those payments to make it more affordable for them to stay in that house.
We have a couple of minutes left. Steve Wagner, if you wouldn't mind, Apple and Samsung squaring up in a patent infringement claim. Is telephony something to watch out for?
Well, yeah, certainly when the dust settles, somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose financially, but they're both going to win in the long term. I mean, this market for smartphones is only growing and it's going to get bigger, and you know, each new release gets more sleek and more sophisticated, more smart, so to speak. And you know, they're both ultimately going to win. But you know, these are battles that are fought, you know, by these
every
companies.
Day, every
absolutely
day.
Every yes. day. They've got teams of lawyers going at it.
Well, speaking of telephony and telecommunications, news yes. of Comcast's mm-hmm. agreement to buy out Time Warner. How does that grab you? Well, $45 billion.
That is big. You know, Comcast now has 30 million subscribers, assuming the deal gets taken care of. And they will control, more importantly, 30% of the market. And that's huge, because that puts them in a huge position of leverage.
30%?
Of the market, yeah. It gives them leverage when they go and talk to folks like advertisers and Netflix and people like that. It really puts them in the catbird seat. So this is something that's a big coup for them, and we'll see how it washes out.
How's this going to affect DirecTV, the satellite provider?
Well, they've got 20 million subscribers, so they're pretty much well behind, and so it may force them to go out and find a partner as well. And this is the evolution and the dog eat dog world, you might say, of the stock market.
We spoke a little earlier about Amazon hiring people. Let's look at the unemployment rate.
Sure.
Some of the numbers. There has been benefits claims on the rise, 339,000
yes.
for the week ending February the 8th, which is an increase of 8,000 from the previous week's unrevised figure of 331,000. It doesn't seem the job market is going anywhere quickly.
No, it doesn't. And again, this is what we've been talking about, this as a plow horse economy. I mean, this is an economy that's not moving up sharply. It's an economy that's moving up very, very, very slowly. And one of the issues has to do with the sad state of employment in this country. You know, right now, I think the employment rate is like 6.1 or 6.2.
Around there, yes.
That's the number the government gives. And it is to be trusted when you define it the way they do. But it doesn't take into consideration all the people that have literally stopped looking for work. Various think tanks have said, look, the real unemployment rate in this country is closer to 15%. And worse than that, amongst young people, the unemployment rate is around 20%. So it's very, very, it's a very big problem.
You mentioned that. You were nodding your head, Steve Grelick, about people who have stopped looking for work. Do you have some personal experience for that? Not you yourself, but your clients, of course.
Yeah, there's a few people that I know, family and friends, that just are in that bad situation, that they've had employment, they've been working at a job for such a long period of time, and now all of a sudden they turn and get that little pink slip, and so it becomes a little more difficult and puts a strain on anybody's relationship.
When you say people have stopped looking for work, they can only get benefits for about 18 months, 2 years, I'm not sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Well, yeah, indeed.
What happens after that?
Well, then they go off the unemployment rolls, technically, even though they're still unemployed, they go off the unemployment insurance rolls.
Right.
And so that doesn't count now as someone who's quote unquote unemployed, and essentially puts them in the category of they just stop looking for work. You know, it's interesting. There's another factoid here. Talking to most U.S. manufacturers, Colin, there are literally hundreds of thousands of jobs available in this country. The problem, would you like to know what the problem is?
Yes, please.
The problem is that these people that are getting out of high school are not qualified, or even in some cases college.
I was going to come to that.
And so there are trade schools that people can go to, vocational schools that people can go to. This is really the area that these folks need to be looking at.
But that's
there
factor,
are jobs out there.
Right. That's a factor of getting out of the basic wage of $8, $9, $10, whatever that may be.
These are good-paying jobs.
Good-paying jobs.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. So people are necessarily have to go back to school, maybe those who are having problems.
There's a lot of business partners now that are teaming up with schools that are cooperating amongst each other. So it's really a good thing to do.
Yes. Well, I think we've got to the end of our show. It's been very exciting, very interesting. One 15-second last word from you, Steve.
Well, it's great to be back in studio here with all of you folks. And honestly, we're going to look forward to future shows as we talk about the U.S. stock markets and the economy.
Right.
We'll stay on top of that for you guys and hopefully give you some good guidance as we go forward.
Thanks very much. And thank you very much, Steve Gorelick of Lorch & Company, working with litigation attorneys, fellow mediators, and collaborators. And thank you, Lisa and Tom. I'm Colin Flaxman. See you again next week.
Tune in every Saturday at 3 p.m. for Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle. This radio programming is not intended to encourage anyone to seek a divorce. The producers assume that callers are seeking basic information. The radio program is intended to be an informational format and does not constitute legal advice. Anyone with legal, mental health, financial, or other professional questions is directed to retain a competent professional after carefully interviewing qualified professionals. A guest appearance by a particular panelist does not constitute a specific recommendation by the producers as to the expertise of that professional, nor does that panelist's views necessarily reflect the views of the producer.